In this era of overachievers and self-starters, few obstacles are as crippling as anger, self-doubt, and anxiety. From professional athletes to young children, our drive to succeed is often squashed by feelings of inadequacy and sometimes rage. Such negative thoughts take a huge toll on our well-being. Our author today is Dr. Johnny Lopps. Dr. Lopps is a psychiatrist, a board-certified psychiatrist for adults, adolescents, and children. He is also the former team psychiatrist for the Brooklyn Nets, a professional actor, and an avid marathoner. He's going to help us today show how to conquer the toxicity of negativity. And his book is called Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools from a Brooklyn Psychiatrist Who Has Seen It All. Johnny, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you so much, Wayne. I appreciate it. I'm very happy to be here.
Okay. So I've been doing work in addiction for over 30 years, and, you know, some of the things that you talk about relate back to that. As we're getting into the interview, we will probably find some similarities on what you are writing about and how it relates to addictions.
Yeah.
Now, I guess the first thing, which is the basic thing, is why'd you write the book?
It's a great question. I wrote the book as I started growing in my psychiatric career. It was probably more so in the early part of my residency into my training to be a psychiatrist that I started feeling that as I was treating my patients at the time and I was meeting more psychiatrists and more folks in the mental health profession, that I had more similarities in my upbringing with my patients. I felt more closer to them with the similarities of the stressors and the traumas that they were experiencing as they were growing up, whereas I felt for a lot of my colleagues, a lot of them had parents who were doctors, or they grew up in sort of middle class, upper middle class milieu, and I started feeling a little bit as an outlier, and I started sharing a lot of my stories of my upbringing with my peers, and, you know, I'm also, within my acting realm, I'm a comedian, so I always try to use my language as one of the tenets of my books to share my story in sort of a comedic value for an entertainment purposes, and I realized a lot of people, even though they were laughing and giggling at some of the absurdity that I'd seen as a child, I think they were inspired. A lot of folks see me, they see a little bit of a generic look, I have the geeky hipster black glasses, and I've had people from time to time say, oh, you know, I really thought you were a boarding school kid from Connecticut. And I laugh and I say, no, I was born in Brooklyn, closer to Coney Island, and by the time I was 13 years old, I had been shot at, I had been robbed at knife point, and a rival gang tried to blow me up. and a lot of people's faces are like, huh, you don't see that every day. And as I got along, I started asking, sheesh, I had experienced a lot of turmoil and a lot of various experiences of anxiety and depression in my life. And so I was curious, what was it? What was it that sort of assisted me in overcoming and persevering through a lot of these stressors to have been fortunate to experience some of the successes I've had? I didn't grow up with any financial resources. I didn't grow up with any networking resources. So through my becoming a psychiatrist and developing my prior practice and working with a lot of different variety of clients, I started honing in and seeing a consistency in the attributes that I thought I had learned through the years that I'd seen through the patients and the clients that I thought were persevering. And I realized there was a few attributes that seemed to fit every time. And I said, let me write about this. This would be interesting to to have a self-help book that had more of an anecdotal approach. When I was doing my research for the book, I realized that I felt that if I found an excellent self-help book written by a professional like myself, they usually had to interview a layperson to sort of get that clinical experience or clinical feedback. And if I read a great self-help book about perseverance from a layperson, it seemed like through the book they would have to go interview with the experts. And I was like, well, this could be an interesting opportunity to sort of be unique, where I can speak about my own experiences growing up and then share that with the tools that I think could help, that had helped me in reflection and can help the reader persevere and move forward with their difficulties.
Back when I was practicing family practice, I think about 25% of my patients came in with the diagnosis of anxiety and 10% with depression.
Sure, that's all right.
And I, in my writings and everything, I have defined anxiety and depression as two symptoms of the disease of addiction. We might talk about it a little later on, but the big idea that I got from reading your book was that we can talk our way to a happier, healthier self just by making a conscious shift away from negative language. Now, if we're going to do that, tell us an example of how we can do that specifically so that the listeners can understand what you mean.
Absolutely, and I can give you a specific example just from my practice on Monday night. I'm seeing a 30-year-old male who I've been seeing for therapy for a year, and the person was in a toxic environment, a toxic job, and we were sort of working through means to get away from that toxicity. And 2 weeks ago, the person sort of told their boss, I'm done with this, I'm quitting, and I'm very proud of this person that they were able to take the risk to move away from this position that was frustrating them. And I warned them, I said, watch, you know, it's great that you're going to be looking for a new position, but it's going to be difficult, like looking for that new job, people are going to be pressuring you, and so forth. And so 2 weeks went by, and they came in on Monday, and he says to me, Doc, it's been a rough 2 weeks. I'm not feeling so well, feeling a little bit more anxious. My mom has been harping on me a little bit about how come I haven't found employment yet. My girlfriend is sort of frustrated that I'm spending more time home. I've been feeling a little bit self-worth and not feeling so great about myself. And I was like, okay, sure. Well, what did you do these 2 weeks? What's been going on? How'd you spend your time? And he's like, oh, well, you know, been doing a few things, caught up with some friends that I haven't been able to see, and I actually took your advice and joined that yoga class that you thought would be beneficial for my health. And, and then I did some networking, and I got a little bite from one of the social media sites, and they might want me to write for them. And I'm just looking at them. And this is a perfect example of what we're talking about here, about language. I said, isn't it interesting that upon the initiation of this session, your language was solely depicted and negative about how you feel about not having gotten a job yet, focusing on how your girlfriend and your mom are sort of coming down on you to create some stress and trying to be loving to help you get a job, but I can take your 2 weeks and change the story completely and say, if I were you, I could have came into session and said, hey, Doc, good to see you. It's been an interesting 2 weeks. No, I haven't gotten employed yet, but wow, I've been so busy at work the last few years that I finally had the opportunity to nurture myself these last 2 weeks. I caught up with an old friend I haven't seen. We had a great lunch at this new restaurant, tried a new food. It was great. I didn't realize I enjoyed that type of food. And then I focused on my health a little bit. I took that yoga class, found a great instructor. I'm going to start doing that, incorporating that, so I can have a little bit more sense of mindfulness as I do the yoga and clear my mind and free myself of the anxiety of the toxicity of the job last year. And I did some networking, and I got this new gig. And he's just looking at me. And it's a perfect example. A lot of times when we what's going on here is that this person is only defining that getting a new job as the ultimate decipher of having a successful day or not. And so, A, by looking at the way we choose our language, if I would have told the story the way, based on his feedback the last 2 weeks, there could have been a lot of optimism, a lot of hope, a lot of lack of self-loathing, because I know it takes time to get a job. The expectations need to be understood that it could take a lot longer than 2 weeks. And I will carry less negativity and hostility towards myself because that hasn't happened, but I'll love myself that I'm using the time wisely to nurture other parts of my life, and I'll feel more good about myself. So that's what the book is trying to get at, about how if we sort of expand and diversify what life can offer us, that if it can't, it doesn't have to just be about the job, that will take itself over time, then we will carry less irritable and angry emotions with us, and we can feel better about ourselves on a day-to-day basis.
There are 7 tips to talk your way to happiness, and I just want you to briefly respond to them, because I know that by reading your book and everything, they can get into this more in depth. But here's the 7 tips that you've got. Flip the script on your self-description.
Flip the script on your self-description. Yes. So that one is very similar to what we were just speaking about, is that this is a free country. You have the opportunity to describe yourself in any means possible. If we are focusing on what we haven't achieved, and that's the way we describe ourselves, then again, we're putting ourselves at risk for feeling self-loathing because there's something we don't have, that we're no good, that our experiences are no good, or that the future is going to be no good, as opposed to highlighting and focusing on the positive attributes, the beautiful things about us, as well as the beautiful opportunities that are out there for us, if we're willing to just make the subtle changes and be vulnerable to put ourselves in those places.
Right. Now, the second one is acknowledge your stressors.
Acknowledging the stressors. This is about humility. This is a big one in my book. We have to be humble and recognize that emotions like pain are a form of communication. Our body is trying to tell us something, that maybe this interaction is stressful and this type of experience can be painful. What is it about us that is inducing that type of experience? Do we not have the sufficient tools to comfortably manage what this experience is about? And this is where I would say I bet you our fields would cross paths with addiction, because I find that a lot of folks who experience emotions or pain from a typical circumstance, if they feel inadequate, that they don't have the skills to position themselves to master it, a lot of times they'll use substances to self-soothe themselves and make the experience easier. But what I find over time is that we continue to avoid getting better at a skill, and then lo and behold, over time we'll continue to become more dependent on the substance like cannabis or alcohol to persevere through that example.
Okay. Now, the third of the 7 tips to talk your way to happiness is tap into your inner voice.
Tapping into your inner voice is a tenet in a very hot new psychotherapeutic field today called mindfulness. And mindfulness and tapping into your inner voice is learning to almost develop a second voice in our head. There's the voice in our head that is sort of being the actor in the film, going through the motions, participating in life. And the way I describe mindfulness to my patients is it's almost like if you're the actor, you have to create a second voice. It's like the director. And the director is observing the interactions between you and the rest of the world. And the director is acknowledging the moments that are happening between you and the outside world. And say, no, wait, that caused you frustration. No, wait. Before you say that, that's what usually gets you into conflict. Oh, wait, no. So it's learning to develop that inner voice that's almost from a third-party point of view, watching the way you interact and catching repetitions, catching patterns. It's almost like becoming your own therapist. And I ask folks to try to enhance this skill level, because if you can get really good at reflecting on what you're about to do, then you can start catching yourself and make better choices and have other options to decrease the chances of repeating maladaptive patterns.
And the next tip, which you already got into a little bit, is to be mindful of the situation.
Correct. So along the same lines, if I'm coming home today and I have some type of stressor from work, and I come home and I see the dishes aren't done, for example, and my wife is sitting there playing a video game, if I'm not mindful, I might be irritated that the dishes are not done, and the anger from my job I might displace onto her because the dishes aren't done. And so a lot of people, to be mindful, is to catch yourself. If you're about to start an argument with your wife over not doing the dishes, is it really about the dishes, or is it more that you couldn't tolerate the anger that came from the workday, and you're looking for an easy place to displace that anger onto, i.e., in this example, your wife? And so in that example, I would ask the person, hold up, wait, are you about to start a new conflict with your wife just because of some issue that you couldn't manage at work? Let's talk about that. Let's find different ways to manage that emotion so that you're not stirring conflict and using anger with your partner to try to self-soothe yourself for what's going on at work. So you want to reverse the way you communicate instead of saying, oh, these dishes, I'm so angry with you, being like, honey, I feel like I have some anger with me, and can you help me talk about that? Or I feel like I need to sit down and express myself a little bit because of what happened at work.
I see. Okay, the next one is take control of your own words.
Absolutely. In the book, I give an example of it's Friday night, and maybe you're at happy hour with a bunch of colleagues, and it's been a tough week. And this goes along the lines about choosing your words and choosing your friendships. If a lot of folks there are enjoying themselves, but a lot of their language is negative, oh, my boss is such a jerk, oh, that peer, they're out to get me, they never help anybody. Again, that type of language, I find, continues to augment this negativity that we carry around ourselves, that going into a wonderful free weekend, you're still ruminating and obsessing about all the negativity and hostility you experience at work. So instead of choosing words that are so hostile, you can flip those words and say, oh, you know, I'm having some conflict with my boss. I wonder if there's something I can work on about that. Maybe I should have a meeting with him next week. Or, oh, I thought that peer wasn't collaborating with me in a healthy way. Maybe we should have a lunch meeting next week and discuss if there's some issue between us that's not allowing the work to grow. And those are, again, simple, very simple, optimistic choices that can really, at the core, all, you know, differ which path that your emotions are going to take as you leave that interaction with your friends that weekend.
Yeah, because negative thinking is one of the perversive addictions in this country, and
absolutely,
you can see it anywhere, any day, any time. And to be able to get past either listening to their negativity or you bringing on your own negativity in response to theirs is a great chance to improve yourself, your self-esteem, on a day-to-day basis.
Right, and if you have colleagues or friends that aren't willing to accept you're trying to be optimistic and work with these things without being so hostile, then maybe you need to change your friendship.
A good point. Tip number six is temper your tone.
Temper your tone it goes back a little bit to mindfulness, is understanding the way our words sound. Obviously, with pitch and pragmatics, our words can carry an emotionality to them. I tell a lot of my parents when they're working with their teenagers. I talk a lot to my adults who are maybe trying to learn how to speak to their spouses, is that I can present an issue that I'm angry about with you, for example, say you win, say we're friends and there's an issue, I can express my anger in the same tone I'm speaking to you right now. I wouldn't have to say, "Win, what happened last night? You left me hanging and da-da-da-da-da." And that you're only going to hear the quality of my voice. You're probably not going to be focusing on the exact words. But I can present the same type of issue with you being my friend, just exactly how I'm speaking to you. I can say, "Hey, Wynn, it was really upsetting last night that I didn't hear from you when we were supposed to meet and go to the movies. Was there something wrong? Was there anything happened? Are you okay?" And be curious about what was going on as opposed to being antagonistic and make it all about yourself.
Great point. And the final tip to talk your way to happiness from your book, Reinvent Yourself, is check in with yourself.
Yes. And checking in with yourself is very similar along the lines of that director role. Directors on sets. Again, I use a lot of movie references only because I'm an actor, and I think a lot of times it's very easy for me to describe it to my clients. But the check in with yourself is like a director, really looking at yourself almost as a set and asking yourself, are all the components working at best in operations? Before we go into the workplace, before we go into this meeting with a colleague, where are we at? Where are we sitting? And this is all about developing, which, again, the book I almost identify as the make or break about long-term growth. This insight. We have to start developing better insight. Let me take that back. This is what irks me sometimes. We have to take an active role. I find a lot of folks want to take a passive role in where they're at in their connections with others. They want the world to sort of accommodate and support them regardless of the emotional presentation they're bringing. Whereas that's only lead to conflict. We have to get better at gaining insight to where we are so that as we're going into a situation, we can understand what was the trigger, what are the risk factors, what are the people in our lives, what is it about our thinking, what is it about our language that is for some reason not keeping us at an even keel. And only when we can do that, then we can make the active steps of trying to make the changes. And I make a lot of references in the book about if you were an athlete. I think athletics is a great comparator because a lot of times if you don't know that you're doing this, you need to have your coaches you have to feel comfortable with other people in your life, just like the athlete has to be comfortable with the coach, that maybe something's not working, maybe something's not functioning, and you have to be humble enough to make that change and be mindful of it so that as you move forth, you don't need the coach. You can check in with yourself and recognize, the coach, remember a long time ago, told me that it's not working. Now I know, and now I've learned that this type of experience, this type of stressor causes me to act in a way that's maybe not healthy for myself. And that is ultimately how we can grow and be better people.
We're talking today with Dr. Johnny Lopps, a psychiatrist who's written a book called Reinvent Yourself, and he was giving us some tips that you can read his book and get more in-depth ideas about. Johnny, where can they get a copy of the book?
So the book is available already on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. You can either go in the heading and just Google, or I'm sorry, not Google, just search for Johnny Lopps, J-O-H-N-N-Y-L-O-P-S, or the title of the book, Reinvent Yourself, Essential Tools for Brooklyn Psychiatrists Who've Seen It All. Or they can go to my website, drjohnnylopps.com, drjohnnylops.com. There's information about my practice as well as about my book and media appearances.
Great. In addition to that, if you would like to go over to Amazon and read a little bit about my book, Freedom from Addiction, it's the home treatment course that has the highest success rate of any addiction program in the world now. And you can find out if you or someone that you love has a problem with any of 20 different addictive behaviors and get some advice on getting over and becoming cured from addiction. Johnny, we're running out of time. This program is called Share Your Mission. I believe that our Creator has given each of us a mission in life, and that if we will find out what that is and pursue it, we'll have a totally different life. So, what's your mission?
I think my mission is to share with those who have experienced a lot of difficulty and hardship in this world, to give them a voice of opportunity. We're living in such a country right now where there's a lot of wealth and fame, and I think a lot of folks who are teenagers and young adults are using the internet and social media, and they're feeling a lot of insecurity that they don't have the opportunities to obtain the same status as a lot of folks. And I find that my book can give them a humble journey that, hey, don't beat yourself up from where you grew up. There's a lot of ways to persevere and overcome it. And if you take your time, work slowly on yourself, take risks, be vulnerable, learn from your mistakes, be inspired, that good things can come from people, that you can achieve a lot of different successes regardless of your childhood and your socioeconomic upbringing.
Well, that's a great mission, Johnny, and thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.